So here's the story. If the media's job is to be honest and tell the truth, then I think we would all agree the media deserves a very, very big, fat failing grade.
All right. Sam Murjofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, and no big, fat failing grade here. Proudly not a member of the mainstream media. Yours truly, reporting live from the Sweet James Studios, deep behind the orange curtain. And looky here, Trump did it again. Every time you think, is he out of doing something wily? Comes out from behind, does it. So this rally, I have to tell you, was a brilliant stroke. And it was absolutely strategic. And it had, of course, the media is agonizing about it, calling it, you know, calling attention to the fact that he missed the White House correspondence dinner and blah, blah, blah. He didn't show up. He's thin skinned and everything. But what Trump right now, what he needs to do and what he's doing, he's recognizing he's got to get back and reconnect with his base. This is what presidents forget about, but especially Republican. The conservative presidents always mess this thing up. It's their greatest flaw. They get elected. So how does the election start? In the primaries, right? In the primaries. And what that president does, what that candidate does before he becomes president is go to the people and rally support in their base. Slowly accumulate their base, and they put the base together, and with that base then, they head into the general election. And general elections are about the myth about swing vote, whatever. It's about taking your base, holding on to your base, and adding a few people to it. That's really what it is. So conservative presidents, Republican presidents, it's about their base plus some. And Trump, look, Trump has to keep his base. He doesn't think about where his support is coming from. It's not coming from Congress. It's not coming from the Republicans in Congress. It's definitely not coming from the Democrats. You got Nancy Pelosi publicly opining how she didn't think that she would miss the days of having George Bush in office. So it's not coming from Congress. It sure as hell is not coming from the media. Okay, the media is not helping Trump. So Trump, the only thing he's got going for him, he's got his base. He's got to keep them on board. And I've told you this before. He starts losing the good folks that are part of his base, and the wheels begin to come off the presidency. So he goes to Harrisburg. Now, he could have gone to the White House correspondence dinner. Right. And this is the White House Correspondents Association. This is a group of journalists that work in the White House. That's it. That's what that is. And these journalists that work in the White House, can you imagine what a pretentious bunch of cats that is? Right. These are all the people that come into the White House every day. They got their credentials. They come in. They sit in the briefing room. They yell at Sean Spicer. They see themselves as the tip of the spear of the resistance to Donald Trump. And what's Trump supposed to do? Go have dinner with them and let them make fun of him and throw pies at his face? Don't you remember what that looked like when Bush was president? Every year that Bush got up there and went to this dreadful dinner, I remember I was scratching my head, maybe you were too. Because you're looking at it, you're going, what? Why? This is an abusive relationship. Leave. Don't go back. And now Trump, of course, is thin-skinned for not showing up. And he's promised to go next year. But the real thing is he's having fun with this. And listen, for example, he talks about it right away. He gets to the rally, which is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So speaking of the Trump base, remember, it's crucial. Do not think for a minute that Pennsylvania was chosen by accident. Pennsylvania was the state where Hillary Clinton was up by 12 going into the election, and then Trump surprisingly won it. Remember that. So file that away in a corner. But he goes, he gets up there. This is Saturday. Bam. He gets up there Saturday night. And here is what he says. Play clip four.
As you may know, there's another big gathering taking place tonight in Washington, D.C. Did you hear about it? A large group of Hollywood actors and Washington media are consoling each other in a hotel ballroom in our nation's capital right now. They are gathered together for the White House Correspondents' Dinner without the president. And I could not possibly be more thrilled than to be more than 100 miles away from Washington Swamp, spending my evening with all of you and with a much, much larger crowd and much better people, right?
Brilliant. He says, what could be better? I couldn't be more thrilled than to be more than 100 miles away from the correspondence dinner, right? 100 miles away from, and he calls it Washington Swamp. Did you hear how the crowd went wild for that? Spending my evening with all of you and with a much, much larger crowd and much better people. So there it is. And he exactly sets it up. He flatters the audience. There's some 7,000 people there. Filled up this arena there in Harrisburg. And these are the people that are looking at the news and are seeing things that worry them. They're seeing a president that doesn't want to call China a currency manipulator. They thought he would. They see a president, the budget today, and I'm going to get to this, trust me. The budget today that came out, this is a Nancy Pelosi budget. This is a disaster. This isn't a Republican budget, let alone a Trump budget. This is a disaster. He's got some explaining to do. He's got to keep his base on board because these people are seeing this and are saying, I don't want any part of it. And of course, you've got a foreign policy that is starting to be far more engaged, far more interventionist than I think many of his supporters had hoped it would be. And so again, he has to explain this. And he does it, by the way. He did it. In fact, when he was talking about the China thing, it was a brilliant turn. He talked about exactly that, I wanted to declare China a currency manipulator, but you know, I kind of need their help with this whole North Korea thing. And he's using this kind of language, very simple, straightforward language. And the crowd, you can hear the crowd, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he goes, you know, I can't ask their help on North Korea and then turn around and call them a currency manipulator. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And the crowd goes, yeah, yeah, that's right. He is talking in the most simple, most basic, most understandable terms directly to the people that elected him. And the reaction from the media, look, not only did they get stood up, right, because he didn't go to their stupid dinner. So he stood him up. And then he is on TV. Forget the 7,000 people in the arena. Think of the number of eyeballs that are on this speech, both live and after the fact. He spoke for an hour. That's an hour on cable news, hour on the networks. I mean, he took over Saturday night. And he's on and he's talking and he's using this language and it's right. He doesn't, again, it's back to the campaign. He doesn't need the media to translate, to make his case for him. You know, you wonder where Obama would have been if he didn't have the media at every turn be willing to translate for him, to explain for him, to hold water for him. So here, with this enormous headwind, Trump goes directly to people. I think that this is absolutely fantastic. It was just, it was great theater. It was extremely, I think, just a smart, cunning political move. But I also think, look, you got, besides the stuff that's happening, that's the substantive moves, you know, things like I mentioned, you know, the foreign policy maybe and trade and all that. I think there's a growing sense among some in Trump's base that he's surrounded himself with some people that maybe his voters don't like or they didn't sign up for. You know, when they look at for example, different advisors, right, in his administration that are maybe a little more lefty, okay, and now what do Trump supporters think when they see this? In my opinion, again, I see this. I talk to people. And I think, look, you've got a guy who might be listening, starting to get, instead of listening to Bannon, instead of listening to some of his core group, he might be listening to some people who have more left-leaning tendencies. And they don't like that. And getting out of Washington, going back and talking to people is a really great way for a president to remind himself that he's not just stuck in the echo chamber of his advisors, of people in the White House, of professional, you know, pollsters and professional handlers and professional strategists, but rather that his gut on what needs to happen, on his his own persuasions that they're true, that they're correct. I remember in California, you know, Schwarzenegger, when he was in office, I got the sense when he was on the campaign trail, he understood the frustration that we had with Gray Davis. Remember that? And he got up to Sacramento and he got stuck in that world. He let the criticisms get to him. He let the professional politicians on the inside tell him what to do. He lost his nerve. You know, maybe Schwarzenegger should have spent a little more time talking to the regular people that were dying under our ridiculous taxes and dealing with all the nonsense and regulation that we had here in California and not just, you know, jetting up and down from Santa Monica up to Sacramento to work, you know, a short week up in, in at the Capitol. It is unusual, typically, and this Bush had this problem. You know, it's the same thing on a national level. You know, the president, there's something very isolating about being president. And it's important to get out and be with the people and to feel the energy from those that are supporting you, that have your back, and and you got to keep them warm. It's like a relationship. You got to maintain it. Now, what do you think is going on? Now, by the way, if you think that he missed out anything, here's just a flavor. Here's a taste of what Hasan Minhaj, is that his name? Minhaj? He gets up, he does the shtick. You know, he does the comedy routine there at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And here's just a short little clip to give you a sense of what was going on back in Washington while Trump was in Harrisburg.
Now, a lot of people think Steve Bannon is the reason Donald Trump dog whistles to racists. And that is just not true. Ask Steve Bannon. Is Steve Bannon here? I do not see Steve Bannon. I do not see Steve Bannon. Nazi Steve Bannon. Nazi Steve Bannon. Nazi Steve Bannon.
Why would he go to this? I mean, the writing's on the wall. And do you think for a minute that they would have been any less merciless with him in the room? You know, Trump understands how the media world works. So, what was the sum total of all of this? Trump gets direct airtime access to not just to the 7,000 people that are in the arena, but to millions of Americans all across the country. Second thing, these crazies, right? This bit about Steve Bannon being a Nazi, okay? We get it, okay? We get it. We're all Nazis, all right? Fine. Okay? But it's not funny. It's hugely stupid, okay? And finally, if Trump had been there, all the airtime would have been on this event. It's brilliant. Instead, where was this event? It was on C-SPAN. Like, no, I mean, it didn't play. It didn't get the air. I mean, people are looking at the clips now, but it's a brilliant move. Way to shut this down and to not give these people any oxygen. Fire needs oxygen to survive, so cut off the oxygen and you're good. All right, more on this when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
All right, we're back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. About this Trump rally, brilliant, swift move here on Trump's part. I think, I mean, even though it was planned, it's a good reflex. Okay, because again, You've got a situation right now that it's his standing is so precarious. I said this a little bit before, but you've got any time a campaign shifts from a campaign into a presidency, you're going to start to see certain amount of adjusting between what was promised and what is being delivered. And when you've got a hostile media willing to point out at every turn, hey, look at what he didn't do. Look at what he didn't do. You've got to have the president or the candidate, you know, because, again, there's president and the candidate, right? He's going to have to run for re-election. Anything he does now is going to, it's not worth a hill of beans if he doesn't get re-elected. So he's thinking about that, correctly so. And what he's got to do is make sure he's still got his supporters on board with him. Now, Trump is making a big boogeyman out of the media. This is unprecedented, by the way. I remember when he first began attacking the media, and even I, usually a fairly astute observer of things going on, I was worried. You know, I thought this isn't going to necessarily play. Somehow he's made it work-ish. But here's how what he says right at the beginning of the rally about his 100 days and about the media.
Now, before we talk about my first 100 days, let's rate the media's 100 days. Should we do that? Because, as you know, they are a disgrace.
And then he goes on and he says, now, you got to, you know, maybe my, you know, the 80%, 89% of the media's coverage of our administration has been negative and purposely negative. And then Trump goes, well, perhaps that's because, according to the Center for Public Integrity, 96% of journalists who made donations in the last election gave to our opponent, a.k.a. Hillary Clinton. Now, do you know what the funniest thing about this is? Is that if you were watching the rally on CNN, immediately following the rally is a CNN roundtable discussion. And they're all Democrats. They're all, you know, political commentators. But, and nowhere does it say, you know, Paul Begala, a Democrat. In fact, here was Begala's reaction to the rally.
He needs this affirmation from his base because he's a moral midget and he is a deeply insecure person. He lost to Hillary Clinton in the popular vote by 2.8 million. He's haunted by that. So he's a needy little baby. And if we're going to wait 1,361 days, and he's still going to be the moral midget that you saw in that stand in Harrisburg tonight.
The moral midget. Listen here, Paul. It's not that he needs affirmation from his base. He needs his base because this base is all he has. And what do you want more than anything? I'm sorry. Last I checked, Paul Begala and CNN, they don't want Trump getting reelected, right? So, of course, the things that the media is telling him to do are the wrong things. Would you listen to your worst enemy? Would you take career advice from someone who doesn't want you to succeed? Think about that. And then this one cracked me up. This is Jennifer Granholm. She's a former Michigan governor talking about the speech.
I am so, so sad for America tonight listening to this speech. If I think of like Republican president, I mean, Ronald Reagan would never have given such an utterly divisive speech. He spent half of that speech talking about the wall, but I feel like I want to take a shower. I'm so sad for this country. I think of Barack Obama calling people to a higher place, calling us to something better. He called everybody to their worst divisive instincts. I'm sad.
Oh, she's sad. And she wants to take a shower. And even better, she's bringing up Reagan. I love right now when Democrats are bringing up Reagan and saying, well, look, Reagan, he was such a great guy. He was such a great, inspiring leader. You Democrats were crapping all over Reagan the whole time he was president. You were the worst to him. And besides, if we can get one more Democrat to take a shower, I call that a win. All right, we got KBC News up next. John Wolf, and I'll be back right after this.
Radio 790 KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, live from the Sweet James Studios, still deep behind the orange curtain. That's right, a voice of reason, straight from the OC. Now, look, of course, the Democrats, the liberals, the press are calling Trump's speech dark and divisive. Do you know why? Because they didn't like it. You know, I don't want to state the... No, I feel like I have to make it this basic. See, remember when I mentioned the echo chamber? And how it's good that Trump left the echo chamber, went to Harrisburg and, you know, and had fun with 7,000 of his nearest and dearest. And the reason it's good is because, you know, in the echo chamber, I don't know, you know how it is when you maybe go somewhere for a period of time and you're just hanging out with a different group of friends and you start to get a little bit weird. Look, everybody's done this. You know, you in college, you start to, like Seinfeld. You know, on Seinfeld, you know, when you got the group of friends and they suddenly Elaine decides she's going to pick a new group of friends and it's very weird. Exactly. So here, that's what it's like. You're on the campaign trail. You've got your head in the game. You understand what the country needs. You're hearing it straight from the voters. Remember, you're not surrounded by Secret Service. You don't live in a fortress. You don't live inside the presidential bubble. And the people that have access to you are who? Professionals, right? Professional political handlers. This is a problem, by the way, that afflicts Democrats and Republicans alike. But it's just that in the professional political world, where do those people tend to lean? I don't care what their party affiliation is, but professional political handlers are who? People interested in their self-preservation, right? And that typically means that these are people who favor statism. They want big government. They want power concentrated in the Washington, D.C. swampland. They want control over our lives. They're not looking to give it up. They're not looking for less. Less is more is not their motto. So I say all of this, you get the president, you get him too wrapped up in that world, you get him too stuck, and get him out as much as possible. But the thing about it is, of course, the people, the swamp people are always going to be the ones that are fighting against it. Now, yes, there was some positive press from, you know, from Fox News and things like that. But I'm telling you, I was watching CNN today for at least half a day. And I do this, by the way, folks, I do this for you. This is, it's insufferable. I do this to prepare for the program. And I could tell you right now, it's awful. It is awful because every question, you know this, every question begins with a completely erroneous premise. And that's what this is. The premise, the Democrats' premise on this is wrong. Trump's speech isn't dark and divisive. It's pretty accurate. It's a good sum up of how things are. We know the media is lying to us. We've known this for years. Why do you think Fox News, before it got Murdoch'd, was at the top of its game? Because people were craving something that was different from CNN, something where they could get the straight scoop. And so millions of eyeballs went there. Why do you think, you know, liberals fail for the most part everywhere they go except for CNN and the major networks? No one wants it. So why would you want the president? Why would you want him to get wrapped up into what that world wants? There's only one explanation for it. You want him to fail. No. Not me. I like this. It's good. And it's, again, it's not dark. It's not divisive. And that lady that was talking about Obama's speeches being so soaring and lofty, yeah, but they were empty, vapid nothingness. Care Bears on, you know, marshmallows. All right, back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
And we're back. Sam Rejofsky here. A shout out here to Susan listening in Irvine. And she's loving the show and just wants to yell at all those Democrats. So, yeah, good thing you are contained in that car, Susan. Great to have you listening and here on board with the program. Now, speaking of Fox News, I mentioned them just last segment. A little bit of update. Now, Bill Shine today. He is he turned in his resignation, quit unexpectedly. Now, this, by the way, was not planned. OK, he was not. This is not a forced out. This is not a firing. In fact, Bill Shine, who is their head of programming. So he's the guy who all the commentators, right, all the people who you are, you know, well, Bill O'Reilly formerly and Sean Hannity and all the people who are on-air talent who express opinions, right? The opinion journalists, if you will, they all report to this guy. And he's been there since 96. He's been there from the very beginning. And he was Ailes' right-hand guy, and he's considered really one of the geniuses behind Fox News. Big deal that he's out. But he quit, and he's a fairly young guy. So I'll tell you how to read this, okay? There's something happening because there's now even more rumblings that Sean Hannity is thinking about quitting. He's not being forced out, but he's thinking about leaving. And he's got some balance on his contract, but presumably there's an exit clause, that type of thing. And it's interesting to me. And I've told you that I think that what's going to happen here is somebody somewhere is going to put the money and make a new network, create something new, or take over something that's failing and make it the next Fox News. And Fox News, as we knew it, is going to go away or is going to change dramatically. And here's the part that baffles me just from from dollars and cents. You know, shoot, if something's making money, why change it completely? Look, it's if you've got a bad actor or a bad egg or a certain, you know, culture issue within the business, that's one thing. Take care of it. Don't let it get out of control. But the whole other aspect to this that just fascinates me is the premise that Fox News isn't what is needed. You know, it's the most profitable part of the whole Fox, 21st century Fox empire. I mean, it's so profitable. It's a total cash cow. So why would you take something that people want and be intent, you know, hell-bent on changing it? Because that's what the rumors are, right? That the Murdoch boys, Junior and Junior, are coming along and they you know, they're into the environment and they're into tree-hugging and people of various colors and whatnot. They're just into that kind of thing. They're very, you know, new age. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Maybe they'll turn it into another MSNBC or CNN. And there was even a rumor that they wanted to get Jeff Zucker in, who's the head of CNN. Look, CNN's programming is garbage. It's terrible. It's not just their opinions. It's their rating. I just bad decisions left and right. But for you and I, it's all about the free marketplace. If there's a demand for a product, if there's a demand for what Fox News was, then it's going to find a home. And that's the beauty of how this world works. Does that mean I get to talk about, I got to talk about Sweet James. I do. Because that's another very important thing about this world. You always need a good lawyer. You need a good cable channel and you need a good lawyer. Okay. And Sweet James, he is the lawyer you need if things get tough. So imagine you're on the freeway, you get rear-ended, get hurt, get out of the car, and what do? Right? You think, I'm gonna call the insurance company, I'm gonna negotiate with them, I'm gonna work things out with them. No, wrong. Bad instincts. What you need to do is get all the information, get everything done, and then call Sweet James Bergner, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. Call for a free consultation. Everyone deserves a consultation with a great lawyer. So you call Sweet James, get on the horn with him, tell him about your case, get all the details, give him every, and he'll help you. He'll guide you through it. He's the lawyer we trust on the program. And if you can't call or want to check him out, visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Well, there's a lot of very bum-hurt Democrats out there, sad that Trump did not make the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and they're sounding off about it. But you know what I think is pretty funny? If you just go back, remember I was telling you about Bush? And I said, you know, I'd watch poor President Bush get up there year after year, dragging his abused, lifeless body up to the podium and get skewered. You know, by it's a press corps that loathed him, that hated him. But do you know what's funny? Is there was a guy, I had to remind myself of this, Frank Rich, writing for the New York Times. He actually said that I don't think that we, the press, should participate in this, because back in 2007, you remember the whole weapons of mass destruction thing, and, you know, Bush lied, people died, you know. And his point was that this White House Correspondents' Dinner actually, it makes us too chummy with the person that we are supposed to be vetting, that we're supposed to be critical of. And he writes in his piece that appeared, I think, in April of 2007. This is Frank Rich, well-known New York Times columnist. Washington wisdom had it that Mr. Colbert, now he was the one who roasted him the year before, bombed because he was rude to the president. His real sin was to be rude to the Capitol Press Corps, whom he caricatured as stenographers. And the media was having a cow over the fact that they were being portrayed as willing, just, you know, repeaters of whatever it was that the president was saying. And the implication is that, look, we're too chummy with this president. We ought to be critically reporting on him, not just taking notes on everything that he tells us about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Get the point? You know, the left is bipolar. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's one thing or the other. And I think Trump make no mistake, I think that he watched Bush 8 years going to the stupid thing, getting raked over the hot coals, and said, why does the guy keep going back? And instead, you know, he won't give him an inch. You see that clip with John Dickerson? It's all over TV. Anyway, it was so good. It was so good because Trump, here, let's play a little bit of it. Roll clip 19.
You saw what happened with surveillance, and I think that was inappropriate.
What does that mean, sir?
You can figure that out yourself. Well,
so Dickerson's interrupting him, right?
You called him sick and bad.
You called him sick and bad.
You can figure it out yourself. He was very nice to me with words.
Talking about Obama.
And when I was with him, but after that, there has been no relationship.
But you stand by that claim about him?
I don't stand by anything. I just, you can take it the way you want. I think our side's been proven very strongly, and everybody's talking about it. And frankly, it should be discussed. I think that is a very big surveillance of our citizens. I think that's a very big topic, and it's a topic that should be number one, and we should find out what the hell is going on.
So this is, okay, so he's talking about the surveillance thing. Now, again, Trump associates working inside of Trump Tower were surveilled. They were. And so you got CBS guy going in there talking to Trump in the Oval Office. And you watch the video crowding Trump's personal space, you know, up in his business saying, hey, well, what do you mean? This is, you're wrong. And Trump just won't go there with him. And finally, the interview ends with Trump saying, we're done here. See you later. And he turns his back on the reporter. And I'm telling you, Trump does not need to win the media over in order to be successful. Far from it. He just needs to have a direct connection with his voters. And he's proven incredibly capable of doing that. All right. I will be back tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Hopefully, a little under the weather today, so forgive me. But I will be back tomorrow feeling 100%. Have a great night and talk to you then. Can't stop, addicted to the shindig. Chop, chop, it says I'm gonna win big. Choose not to life of imitation. Distant us into the reservation. Talk Radio 790 KABC.